us what your full name is?
My full name is Paul Bernard Scheifler.
And where do you reside?
In Hutchinson, Kansas.
When and where were you born?
I was born in Belfry, Kansas, on the farm in 1924.
And what were the names of your parents?
My parents were Charlie and Mary Scheifler.
And Mary's maiden name was?
Spacial. S-P-A-C-I-L.
Oh, very good. And your grandparents on both sides, who were they?
I had a grandmother, Emma Scheifler. And on my father's side and on my mother's side was Wenzel and Emma Spacial. And they lived at Ellenwood.
Yep. What brought them to Edwards County?
My father went out there to farm. And he wasn't at Belfry at first. He was down by Hopewell. That's where he first started. But they were married in Ellenwood.
They went to Hopewell?
Yes, they went to Hopewell and they lived there a while. And then they moved up northwest of Belfry. They moved up northwest of Belfry in Pawnee County, and then from there they moved back to Edwards County, which was like 2 miles south from where they were.
About what year was that?
I think they were married in 1912, and I think 1916, and then my oldest sister was born in 1918.
And so by 16 they were in Edwards County then?
I would say so, yes.
Did they buy property or did they the farm? I mean, I don't know if you call it homesteading or did they lease or?
No. You know, I don't know. I think they bought, I think.
Okay. So we're gonna just before we get to the World War II topic, we'd like to know what you remember about the Depression and the Dust Bowl days, and do you have any recollections of that time period and what it was like to live on the farm?
Oh yes, they used to let call school out because it would get so dusty that you wouldn't be able to see to get home. And they would leave school out, and of course we always had cows to milk, and if they was out in the pasture, we had a hard time finding them to get them up to the barn.
I never thought about this. Did the animals ever get sick because of the dust? I know people had to worry about them. Mm-hmm.
Well, not that I know of, but I did lose an uncle from dust pneumonia. And of course, I always, I was one of the lucky ones. I always got to ride a school bus to school. And part of the times, kids didn't. There wasn't school buses in their area. Oh, the school bus was, well, it wasn't. It just had it was like a closed-in box, top and all, and it just had a bench on each side in the school bus, and the only heater in that bus was the exhaust pipe. They put it through a pipe and it run up through the floor and then back out the back end of the bus. That was the heater we had in there.
Better than nothing.
Better than nothing. And the more kids you got in there, the warmer it got.
During the Depression, how did your family fare as far as did it?
Well, it was, a farmer is pretty well, can take care of himself. He has his own meat, he has his milk and cream and eggs. And he raised his garden, you know, so the farmers, they, well, we didn't have a lot, but. And what?
How old were you when you started working the farm?
Oh, I was milking cows before I went to school.
Oh, goodness. And you started school probably when you were 6 or 7?
Yes. Oh yes, and everybody in the farm had a job to do. Of course, we had cattle and we had hogs and chickens, and someone had to carry in the wood and for the stoves and the coal.
And how about water? Was that, did you have it well?
Water.
Was that in the house, or did you carry that in?
We were lucky. We had a pump inside the house, which was nice. Of course, all the water was to do the laundry was pumped by hand and heated on the stove.
I guess we didn't say this. Describe your family, your brothers and sisters. You know, you had an older.
I had a sister that was born in 1918, and then I had a brother that was born in 1920, and then I had a sister that was born in 1922, and then I was born in 1924, and then I had another sister, and she was born in 1926, and then my brother Ed, he was born in 1925. There was almost 2 years between each one of us kids.
27, the last. So there were 6 children, right?
Yes.
And 3 boys and 3 girls.
That's right. Every boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, boy.
We never asked this before, but how were your chores different than your sister's chores?
Oh yes.
What was the division of the labor there?
Well, the sisters usually, they gathered the eggs, and us boys, we done the, like feeding the hogs and milking the cows, and but the girls, they also milked some.
Did the girls do more housework as far as like dishes and washing?
Yes, because I lost my mother when I was 4. So, then our grandmother, on my father's side, he came and lived with us for. Yeah, she came to live with us. How long did she live with us? 8 years.
So your grandmother raised you for quite a while then?
Yes. And my grandmother couldn't hear. So. And she couldn't speak English. But my father, he could speak German, and they could communicate with one another.
Then did you know German?
No. I could tell you what you were talking about, but as far as speaking it, no. I got to where I could understand kind of what they were talking about.
Okay, let's see. Trying to remember, you said that your older brother went into the service before Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
Before we started the interview. How did that come about? And his name is Charles.
Charles. Well, see, they just started the draft, and he was drafted then.
Would that have been in 1940?
40.
Or 41?
41. 41.
Remember about what time of year? What month?
It was in the fall. It was either September or October.
Okay, so right before Pearl Harbor?
Yes, like, yes.
And he was drafted into the Army.
Yes. Well, first place was...
Well, no, that's all right. Where was he? Maybe where was he on Pearl Harbor Day? Do you remember?
He was still in the States. And then he didn't go over for quite a while. He was in a tank destroyer company.
And he was training where?
He trained in Fort Bragg, Kentucky, and he was in Fort Hood, Texas. Gosh, I can't.
Well, if we interview him, we can find that out.
Yeah.
So then on Pearl Harbor, what do you remember about that day? When you heard the news? How did you hear the news?
We heard the news when we were in school. Of course, we never had a radio at home then. Those days. Yeah, we were in school, and it seems to me like they called us all to the study hall and announced that that war was declared.
Do you remember what your reaction was? I'm trying to think, how old were you about then? 20?
Probably been 18.
You were about a senior?
Was I a senior? Yeah, I would have been. I graduated like in 1942, so. And the war started in 41, so I was a junior when the war started.
Do you remember how what your feelings were or how you reacted?
No, I really didn't. I don't remember. Because I do remember that them taking the kids older than I out of my sister's class. See, they all had to go to the service. And then I thought surely the war would be over before I'd ever have to go, but it wasn't.
And then you said you had like a farm deferment.
Yes, see, they changed the draft. Used to be you had to be 21 to go, and then they changed it to 18. And that's when I was called. See, I wasn't 21 when I was called.
Well, were you called right after you graduated, right after you graduated from high school, or a little bit later?
No, I think I was deferred like 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years, I think. Yeah, I would have been because I went in 44 and I graduated in 42.
You said that's because you need the farm. You were the oldest boy at home.
Then after my oldest brother was in, when Charles was drafted.
How did life change for you then when Charles went away and you were the oldest boy? Did it change much?
No, it just seemed like I had more work to do.
Short one hand.
Short one hand, yes. When did we get a tractor? Oh man. Well, I know the first tractors we had didn't have rubber tires on it. They had steel wheels and lugs.
So did you farm with horses first? Or did you?
Oh yes, we used to work all the corn and plant the corn with horses.
How old were you when you were out driving the team?
Oh, probably 12. Oh, yeah, I cultivated lots of corn. And when we would go to the field was like 4 miles from where our house was. And, of course, we had to put feed in the wagon for the horses. And we had to take our own lunch, feed and water, of course, for the horses. Of course, it was pretty good. You didn't you didn't work like you do today, the horses couldn't go all day. You could only go so long. And I think that was a downfall of the farmer. He thought he could work all day long and all night when we got tractors.
So by the war time, you would have had a tractor before the war?
Yes.
Yeah.
The first tractor I remember was we had a 1927 McCormick Deering. And my dad had one before that, and it was a Fordson. And then we got a 27, and then we had a 28, and then we got a 1936 Farmall so we could work the row crop instead of using horses.
Yeah, when you got that 36, was that a new tractor?
That was a new tractor.
During the Depression?
Yes.
And
we also was rationed, you know, on gas during the war.
The farmers got a ration for farming, too, though, didn't you, for the gas?
Yes. And then we also had different rationings. We had an A card and a B card and a C card, and some of that was for farm, and some of it was for if you had to have gas to go to your job, like wherever you work, somewhere else. And then we were rationed for tires. We just couldn't go buy tires. We had to go to our county seat to get tires. You had to prove that you needed tires. But I do remember that my dad was saying something about how much gas was, and it was 4 cents a gallon. Of course, that would have been without any road tax. See, they'd done it different then. You used to pay for it, and then you'd fill out a piece of paper and send it in, and they'd send you back your tax money, the gas that you used on the farm. So they weren't taxing the farmers to use the fuel.
I didn't know that. That's So, let's see. So then you were drafted, when they lowered the age to 18. And then what, and your younger brother, you said, got old enough.
Yeah, then see, I was... When they lowered it to 18, and then I was deferred for 2 years. I went in when I was 20.
And then, but then your Ed had the farm deferment, or was there to help?
Yes,
with the farm.
He was there. They figured Ed could help, and then when he got old enough, then he had to go. But by that time, Charles had came home because the war was over. And Ed probably wouldn't have had to go on if Charles hadn't have been home.
He would have stayed on the farm deferment.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you got your letter from Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
And you want to go ahead and tell us about your induction and, well, maybe first start with when you left.
Well, we all had to, when we first started, when we became 18, we had to register. And then when we registered, we was put in a class, like class 1A or 2A or whatever. And when mine came up, we went to Kinsley and we got on a train and we went to Leavenworth and took a physical.
How many of there were you from Edwards County or?
It seems to me like when I went, there was like 10 or 15 of us that went up for our physicals. And then they gave us our physicals, and then they sent us back home, and then they classified us. And I can't tell you what all the classifications were, but if if you was in 4F, that meant you were physically unfit to go. Something was wrong with you. Yeah, whatever.
So you came home, and then how long between you coming home and did you leave?
Well, then I was home. I was deferred then for 2 years.
Oh, you had that physical was when you were 18.
Yes. And then I was deferred for 2 years. I had a farm deferment because, of course, my oldest brother was gone, no one to help my father. Then after they thought Ed was old enough, then they took me. And then I went to Kinsley, and we rode the train to Leavenworth, and we got our physicals. And
when you left Kinsley, was there a big group of you, or just the
I think 10 or 15 of us.
Was there any kind of a send-off, or did you just
get
on the train?
Just got all lined up and got on the train. And then I remember changing the train at, I think we changed in Kansas City, and then we got another train and went out to Leavenworth to take our physicals. And I can't remember, did they? Of course, I passed my physical. And then after I passed my physical, then I came home, and I was home for about, I think, like 2 weeks before I went to the service then.
And then where'd you go? Get on the train again?
Yes, and I went back to Leavenworth. That's when they inducted us. And I went to Leavenworth, and we got our army clothes. Then he put us back on the train, and I went to Texas. I went to Texas and took my training, which was it was at Fort Hood, and I went down there. Of course, we'd done a what do I say? They do an IQ test on you. Well, they put me in. They called it IRTC, which meant Intelligence and Reconnaissance Training Center. Then I went to Texas and took my training for 12 weeks. Then we had a delaying route, and I came home for about a week, and my orders were back, shipped me to Fort Meade, Maryland. And that's, then we...
You took the train there then?
Too? I took the train to there. And then from there, I went to Camp Shanks, New York, and got on the boat and went over to Europe.
We had a question that we've been sort of asking about being on the train. Did you remember any, we've heard stories about towns that would bring out lunches and food and things out for the servicemen as the trains went through?
Oh, yes. There was usually someone there to about every town that you could talk to people that were there. They called them troop trains.
Uh-huh.
And I do remember... I do remember when you rode the trains those days. You want to remember they burned coal, and you would just get real black riding the trains because we wasn't no air conditioning in them, and you opened the windows, and everybody just got black from the smoke. Yes, there was quite a few people. Well, that was transportation. There wasn't airplanes then.
But it was both troops and civilians?
Yes.
And brides? And
but some trains were strictly troop trains. Well, I mean, you know how long a train is. There's all troops on a lot of those.
And you were traveling with a unit at that time, or going to meet?
Just going to different places. Like I went to Camp Hood, some of them went to California, and some of them went wherever the camps were.
What do you remember what the ship was that you went to Europe on?
Thomas H. Barry.
And that would have been what year or month?
That'd been in the fall of 1944.
What was it like on the ship, on the ride over?
Well, a lot of them spent their time over the rail. They get sick, but it never bothered me any. And never had very good food on the boat. It wasn't real good.
How long did it take?
It took us 10 days to get over there.
Well, that's pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. The largest convoy, which they call it convoy, a whole bunch of ships that was carrying troops. I went over on the largest one of those.
Was there any worry about German submarines?
Oh, yes. We would have
airstrikes?
They told me that we didn't just go straight over there. You have kept zigzagging because it took so long for a submarine to get lined up to your boat. So you didn't go straight. And then when we got to England, we transferred off of that boat onto a English ship. And everybody says, you'll like that. They feed you 3 meals a day. Well, see, we was only getting 2 meals a day on the American ship. But it wasn't worth it. Do you ever try to eat liver for breakfast? Well, you know, their food wasn't very good at all.
You had no time layover in England. You just got off one ship and got on another? Or
mm-hmm.
Did you get to step?
They got on another one, and then we got out in the channel. We went out in the channel, and I don't know how far we were from the shore, but anyway, everybody had a duffel bag. You had your belongings in, you know. And then this little old LSI boat came up beside that big ship, and you threw your duffel bag down there in that little boat, and then you jumped out of the ship into there and try to get on your land on your duffel bag to break your fall until it got it full, and then we'd go to the shore, and then the end of it would fall out, and we'd just all run out on the ground. Well, we had a little water to go through because they couldn't get up to the land.
Where did you land?
I landed in Omaha Beach.
You did. Is this D-Day?
No, way after D-Day. See, D-Day was like June 2nd or something, 1st.
But you're right there on that same beach.
Yes, where they had... yes, and there were still bodies floating in the water when I went in. Because they had, you know, had some terrible battles along those beaches. And then we landed, and then we went on our special diet, Spam. And then from there we were assigned then to our different units, being we were draftees, and and we weren't in with an outfit. We just, well, we were replacements. They called us replacements. And then if I was in the Yankee Division, which was the 26th Infantry Division, and if they needed 500, 500 of you went there, and then they put you in whichever company or battalion or whatever, regiment, whatever they needed troops in.
Now, you said your training was in intelligence and
reconnaissance.
Is that what you did when you got there?
No. They changed that then. After I was there, after I started my training, we was in training for intelligence and reconnaissance. And then they changed it to Infantry Replacement Training Center.
Sounds like the Army.
Yeah.
So where did you go from Omaha Beach then? Where were you assigned?
I can't remember. I went to the Yankee Division, which was the 26th Division. And I can't remember what part of France we went in where I first joined them.
Well, what happened after that? You joined up and...
Right to the front line we went. No.
And the front line was in France or Germany at that point?
It was in France, yeah.
Still in France.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what town it was. But most of our traveling there was by foot.
And you had tanks with you too, or?
Yes. As a general rule, but the infantry, we went out. With the infantry, it was always in the front. Of course, we had the big shells that came in that supposed to...
They shelled before you went in.
As a general rule, yeah. The bombers would come in, you know. And
were you under air strike from German planes, or?
Oh, yes. They had a plane, and we called him Bed Check Charlie. He came over every night. Every night when it was dark, and he was trying to find out where we were.
So he was a reconnaissance.
Mm-hmm. No, you didn't smoke at night or light a match or anything, you know. So, but like you said, then they changed it to infantry, but they knew you had an MOS number, you know what that is. I suppose they classified you if you was in the infantry or the tanks or artillery. You had an MOS number. But anyway, they knew that I'd been in intelligence and reconnaissance, and what does that mean? There's nobody in front of you but the enemy. So we would go out on night patrol back into the German lines to find out how many guys they had.
Now, did your slight knowledge of German help you there, or?
No, because you never made contact with them. It was just strictly.
And you didn't get close enough to hear.
No, well, yeah, you could hear them, but you didn't make yourself known that you were there. So it'd been too bad.
Did you have contact with the French people as you progressed?
Not much. I was trying to think who was on our flanks. I hate to say this, but we didn't like the French. They weren't very good soldiers. We didn't like to be close with them. But the first thing you got into a place, you dug a foxhole.
I'm trying to think now. Is it winter now?
Yes, it's start turning winter. So I joined, I think it was October or November. Can't remember the name of the first. You know, they named the combat zones. They had different, like Montcourt Woods, where we fought in the Montcourt Woods, or different places like that, you know. Yeah, where the battle was mostly in a lot of trees. And of course, you had springs everywhere. And you had a crossing, you just held your rifle above your head and walked through it. The water would come up to your chin. And of course, you didn't have any dry clothes. You just wore them until they got dry. And I don't know. It looks to me like every soldier would have died with pneumonia. But it didn't seem like anybody had colds or anything. So we just kept going.
And your food was Spam and cigarettes, right?
Yeah, that's about it. And then we had C rations, which came in a can. And they weren't very good. And then we got K rations, which was real good. They came in a box, in a square box about that deep. Then you get three of them in the morning, and that was all your meals for all day. You had a breakfast and a dinner and a supper.
What was in those?
And in those, in the breakfast was a little can, generally, of scrambled eggs. And four crackers. And toilet paper. Four cigarettes. What else was in there?
Any meat?
No, not on the breakfast.
Fruit.
Pizza? We had a little bar. I forget what they called it. A K bar or something. And then the dinner, it had a meat in the can. Oh yes, and there was always a little packet of coffee, powdered coffee, and that box, if you burned it, would heat the water enough to make you some hot coffee. And there was matches. I think we had matches in there, and like I said, and I think there was, I believe that it seemed to me like one meal didn't have cigarettes in it.
Maybe the night one, when they didn't want you lighting up.
Yeah. So,
you proceeded going across France and then into Germany, or?
Well, yes. I went kind of into Austria. Belgium. I was in Belgium, too. Luxembourg. Belgium.
Switzerland?
No, I wasn't there.
And you were doing combat and pushing the German back?
Yes. Of course, after so long of time, a platoon had 36 people in it, and each squad had 12. And my job was during the war, I was a VAR. I wasn't the BAR man. I carried his ammo and stuff. BR assistant. which isn't, that meant it was an automatic weapon. Took a lot of ammunition for those.
So you were the carrier of the ammunition?
Yeah, I carried a lot of ammunition.
And you were you assigned to one person, the one gun? Or?
Yes, but I had several of them because I lost several of them. And we ended up, like I told you, I ended up with there was only, we were supposed to get a break. And we were going back to Metz, France, for a rest. When at that time, I was only, there was only two of us left in our squad. Then we went back to Metz, and we were there, oh, week or 10 days, and then the Bulls happened. You remember you heard about the Bulls, where the Germans broke through again. And then there we all replaced, and we all went right back to the front. Everybody did. We got a whole bunch of new replacements, just new kids, just like I was. Of course, they was younger than me. And then, and we just kept getting replacements constantly because we kept losing them all the time. I have to tell you a little story about one of our attacks we made. Of course, you know, we had an attack when we'd all go to attack something, an area. Well, I got up there, and here come a German tank. Here came a German tank, and he was shooting his guns, you know, and I got up there, and I got behind a tree that was about, I suppose, about 4 inches around, and I thought I was real protected. And the bullets were just flying, and my sergeant hollered at me, said, "Paul, get up and go on further." And I says, "I can't. I think I was hit." He shot my canteen, and I could feel it. Water, and I thought it was blood running down my leg. And I says, "I don't think I can go," because I could feel it when that hit. And then the water started running. I knew it was hit, and I didn't think I could run, but I could after I found out.
But, you could and you did?
Huh?
You could and you did? And
yes. But I was within. That tank was probably 10 to 15 feet from me. I don't know why they never got me. Evidently, I was too close. They couldn't see me. And then that tank finally decided to leave. And he left and turned around and went back. So...
So, where were you on VE Day?
VE Day, I remember that just so plain. I think it was in Austria. We were walking that day. Well, now that was when, I got to tell you this other little story. We were walking one day.
Just a second. We'll turn this on and see if there's another good story.
And the lieutenant announced that our president died.
Say that again. The lieutenant announced.
We announced and told us that our president had died. Roosevelt. See, he died just before the war was over. Isn't that right? And then we all felt bad, and we were about to. Of course, we thought we had the war won by then, you know. And we thought it was such a shame that he didn't get to know that it was over with.
something that I just read before when you said you were over there in the fall. And do you remember Christmases and what they were like?
Yes. We always, Christmas and Thanksgiving, we always had a Christmas meal. We had a Thanksgiving meal. It didn't come on that day, but we did get a good hot meal for Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Were there times when you didn't fight over the Christmas? That's what I've heard. Were they?
Well, yeah, it went right on.
Yeah, it went right on. It went right on. As far as you were concerned, okay. Must have been in different places. So you were in Austria on VE Day, and then what happens to you? Or how do you, at the end of the war, do you stay over there for a while? Are you part of the liberation?
Yes, I was over there. In fact, I was over there another year after the war was over as occupation troops. I first went to, our outfit really went home, but they took all of us out that weren't in long enough. They didn't have enough. Well, they went by points in later when the war was over to who got to go home. Let's see, what was I going to tell you?
Talking about liberation. You were in there for another year.
Yes, and then see, when the war was over, I was first put in another infantry division, but I wasn't in it but just a little while. And then they took a bunch of us out, and I went into the MPs for occupational troops. And then I went to Vienna, and then I was in Vienna until I came home as an MP. And when, see, Vienna, there was, what was there, four of us? They divided that in, the Russians had part of it, we had part. Yes, we had part of it, and France had part of it, and England and Russia. And then I was in the MP.
What did you do as an MP?
I got to be in the motor MPs, which we patrolled in Jeeps, which was okay. Which that was okay. We didn't have to walk, you know. We patrolled the town. Like, I don't know, we had, I don't remember how many hours we each put on, 8 or so hours, but then that was.
And you were just keeping the civilian piece and military.
And military, that piece in our section of Vienna. And that was real nice because you could eat anytime you wanted to, and you could eat what you wanted to. You just ordered the MPs. The cooks would make you what you wanted. But that was nice. And I think we got a little bit better food. It seemed to me like we did.
Now, did you have more contact with the local people as an MP or not?
Yes, we did. We did, and they had a curfew. Whenever nighttime came, there were supposed to be no civilians on the streets anymore. So there was a few times that we had to pick people up and take them to our headquarters. Well, I forget what they called it.
Well, that's good enough, headquarters.
We'd take them there if we found somebody, or we, of course, now us old combat guys, we were nicer than that. If they knew where they lived, we'd take them home, you know, instead of taking them back and letting them. They didn't need to do that. We felt like that they was wanting to be home anyway, so we'd just take them home. That's why they like America.
I'm gonna back up just a little bit because we forgot to ask you: was there a girlfriend or anything in the picture during this time?
Nope.
No, you weren't corresponding, but you were writing your parents. And,
yes.
And about how often were you able to get mail?
It depends. It depends. We had, what did they call them? We had V-mail. You would write a letter, and then they would shrink it up in a little thing and send it home. So it wouldn't be as bulky.
Oh, they actually photocopied it, reduced it.
Yes, and reduced it, made it smaller.
I had never heard that. I heard about censoring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was just a, it was a little bitty thing that when it went home, they, you know, photocopied it. That was, oh yeah, I wrote home quite often, but not like I should. In fact, I should, I think my sister has all the letters that I wrote to her at home. I never did get them, so I could look at them.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about that time period in Europe that stands out as something that was... What was it like when you came to a town?
All the people were just as happy as they could be. The Burgermaster, they called him, which would be the mayor. He would come and greet us, and the people would just be as nice to us. They'd give us all the food that we wanted. You know, of course, the food wasn't like we have here, but they would give us their best. If, so. Yes, at first, see, the people were all gone, and when we'd come to these towns sometimes at night, we'd just go in their houses and stay all night instead of making foxholes. We might sleep on the potatoes in the basement, or we may have a big, nice feather bed, or so. That what?
Some deer? Did you?
Yeah, what was it? I can't remember now. Oh, yes. We would, us GIs, of course, we'd shoot a deer and then roast it over and make a fire and roast it and eat it. And I tell you, those civilians, they knew we should all be in jail because they couldn't do that.
You were poaching.
Yeah, we weren't. They couldn't do that, but we did. And we would go into these homes and we'd eat eggs and we'd get the chicken, kill chicken and fry it in our mess kit or something like that. And it really didn't make any difference because the chickens would have probably got killed anyway and the eggs would have probably spoiled. So they, to keep their eggs, they put them in a bucket of salt water.
This would be a raw egg?
Raw eggs. And I don't know how long they would keep in there, but the all the ones we had were good. Now, I don't know how old they would have been. But they were still good when we was there anyway. But that's how they kept them.
Now, you didn't get into Germany far enough into where the concentration camps are?
Yes, we did... was it Bougainville? We captured a concentration camp where they had it, and the one we were at, they told the people, now you're all going to get to go shower. And so they had a big shower room there, and of course your showers are up there. And they run them all in there, and they turn gas on. And, well, it killed everybody. And then they had big trenches out there that they just threw them all in. And what?
Did you see them?
No, we didn't see them. Because they had already done it before we got there.
Well,
No, we, when it, like towards the end of the war, we would get so many Germans would give up, and they wanted to be captured. And it got to where whenever we'd capture someone, we of course we kind of interviewed them pretty quick. Of course, we kind of settled out on trying to find out all the information we could get. And then when, towards the end of the war, there were so many that they were just surrendering, and we just say, well, just keep a walking down that road. Just keep walking. Somebody'll tell you where to go. Just keep walking that way. That's when they got the surrendering so fast that we couldn't handle them anymore, us up on the front lines. But we was moving so fast, too. Oh, I went into this little town. Of course, when you went into these towns, you went through every building to look for the Germans. Yeah, we were supposed to be going two together, but we didn't have enough of us, so I went in this one house by myself, and it was a room about the size of this, and I went in there, and it was all German officers, and they all just threw their guns right out in the middle of the floor. Well, they gave up, see. What was I to do? I couldn't handle all those weapons. I couldn't carry them. But I did get home with one.
What kind of a gun was that?
It was a Luger. They're 9mm, I think. They're not like our calibers.
So you just marched those officers right out to your...
Yes, I took them out then, and I got all the weapons that I left them in that house. I don't know whatever happened to the weapons. But I told them, now you all go out. And then I said, you just start down this road and just keep walking, and somebody will tell you what to do.
Now, were you telling them that in English?
There was something. There was always about one German that could speak English and understand, as a general rule. We had one guy that could speak pretty good German.
No, not yet. He may need. Do you need a drink?
No. Oh, okay.
So, the war's over. You spent a year being an MP, and then how do you come home?
Well, finally, I had enough points, and I could come home. And then when I left, and I came home.
Where did you leave from? What for? France again? Or?
Oh, gee. You know, I don't remember where I got on to come home.
He was in Austria. He was 2 days off.
Yeah, they would give us passes, and I went to Switzerland too.
What did you do on those R&Rs?
Well, I bought watches, and because they was cheap over there, and we just go see different things. Of course, I went skiing. I went skiing in the Swiss Alps, and I went to Paris and spent 2 or 3 days there. But I never did get a pass to England. Never did.
Well, you'd had enough of their food.
Yeah. But anyway, we got a pass. We left from Linz, Austria. We got on a... We flew from Linz... No, Salzburg, Austria, to Paris. We had a pass, and there was a lieutenant in charge of us. There was about 10 of us, I suppose. And we flew to Paris, and then we were all supposed to meet back to come home. But the lieutenant had our orders, you know, our transportation orders. And he said, well, we'll all meet here at a certain day, at a certain time, we all got there and there was no lieutenant with our orders. And we needed to get back to Austria. And I told them other guys, I says, I don't know what you guys are going to do, but I'm going to try to catch train anytime I can, and whenever they put me off, they'll put me off and get back. And so that's what I did. And I got back to the outfit. I said, boy, this is it. I'll be in the brig from now on, because I was about a week or 10 days late, because I just couldn't make connections to get back. So nothing was ever said. They knew all
the
way.
Did the lieutenant show up ever for the rest
never
of
did. Never did know what happened to the lieutenant. Never did. I never did know what happened to that lieutenant, where he ever went or what happened to him.
So you were pretty much traveling on your own?
I was on my own. And it's a wonder they didn't, and it didn't cost them anything to get on them trains. I don't know why they were hauling us for nothing, but I guess because he was a soldier, I suppose. We could just get on the train and ride.
And you had money to buy food? And
yeah, which didn't cost very much. Yeah. Of course, let me see, we'd had in France, we had francs, and then we had marks in Germany. Would have been marks. And then we had a money that would work every place. They called it,
today it's a euro, but I don't know about that.
What did they call those things? It was really funny. But they'd spend just like our money, but if you had our money over there, you could get quite a bit for it. But I never did get any of them had any American money over there. We weren't supposed to have American money over there, because they didn't want our money to be over in that. Those people over there loved it, because they knew their money wasn't any good over there.
So, how did you get back to the States?
Well, finally, when I had enough points, I started back to the States. And I got on the boat, and a little, I called it a victory ship. One of them that Kaiser, or what was the two guys, the cars we had, Fraser and Kaisers. It was one of those ships. And that ship did not have a bolt in it. Everything was welded. Like where the wires went, it was welded. There weren't any screws there. But I need to tell you about the one when I was going over there. On the Thomas H. Berry, they put me down, when I was down, way down, underneath the water, where I was, my bunk, and I was next to the wall, and that wall, we could not mop fast enough to keep the sweat off the floor. That's how that wall of that ship was sweating down in there where we were, in the water just down there in the bottom. Yeah, we
a lot of people making the humidity.
Yeah, and that side of that boat, I never seen anything sweat like that. Just the water just run off of, like, I kept thinking it had a hole in it, you know. Thought, well, we're done for. But I couldn't believe it could sweat that fast.
How was the victory ship different?
It was little. It was pretty little. There wasn't too many of us on it. And that thing would stand on end. It would go over a wave and go right straight down in the water.
It was little.
And it was, in fact, they wouldn't let us out out of the our bunk area, because it stood right straight up on the end one time when it went up over